Hi, I'm Peter Crick and welcome to 2ARM FM. Today we're going to be talking about the 2022 Byron Bay Writers Festival, which is due to begin towards the end of this month. But as an adjunct to it, there's a program called the Writers on the Road program coming to the Northern Tablelands next weekend, starting August 20th at Dorrigo and finishing at Tenterfield on August 24. Armdale's hosting the Writers on the Road program on Sunday, August 21 at the New England Regional Art Museum from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. One of the visiting storytellers is Jane Caro, and I'm pleased to have arranged for Jane to be able to talk to us here at 2ARM FM. Welcome, Jane, and thank you very much for taking our call.
Oh, thank you for asking me.
Now, can you tell us a little bit about the 2022 Byron Writers Festival, and more specifically, the Winter in the West Writers on the Road program?
Well, I mean, I've been to Byron Bay Writers Festival a few times before, and I know that it's always a really dynamic and interesting collection of authors and writers, but also readers and you know, residents of the area, and there are terrific discussions, and there's, you know, it's a festival of ideas, it's a festival of books, and it's a festival of conversation. So I'm pretty sure that once again it'll be a really exciting, intellectually stimulating, emotionally uplifting, but also challenging festival over the weekend from the 25th of August. The Writers on the Road program, of course, is new to me. I haven't done it before, but I know that I'll be travelling with three other writers and who I also don't know, so I'll be very keen to meet and know that, get to know them. And we are doing panels in the evenings for adult audiences, but from the Monday on, we will be visiting various public schools in each of the towns that we are visiting, and each of us are running writing workshops for students. I'm doing a senior students writing workshop concentrating on historical fiction.
And that's at each of the towns you're going to, that's going to be happening in public schools in each of those places?
Yes. That's correct, yes. So it's going to be very exciting, and I've done writing workshops for students before, but never in rural and regional areas, so this will be great for me. And it's always fun interacting with students, because of course my first novels were a trilogy about Elizabeth Tudor for young adult audiences, so that's one of the reasons that probably I was lucky enough to get chosen for the Writers on the Road project.
Yes, well, from our point of view, it's really good to see something like this extending into the rural areas.
I think it's great.
Yeah.
Great.
And you've obviously jumped at the opportunity by the sound of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, as soon as my publisher got in touch and said they wanted you to be part of this, I went straight to my calendar and went, woohoo, those dates are free. I'd love to do it. Because I think it's, you know, really important to get, you know, writers and ideas and books out to kids who may not be as exposed to them as some children who may live closer to, you know, busy centres. And so they're the kids who we need to reach out to most.
Yes, and it's often, having been involved in education, an issue with people in rural areas, particularly those that are quite a large distance away from centres like Brisbane or Sydney, to be able to get access to you know, the working engine room of publications, performances, etc. So it's always great when this is brought to the town.
Absolutely, and I think it's really important to offer a support to those schools, because I have an enormous admiration for the schools, almost all of which are public schools, which take on the hardest end of education, which is often those schools that have concentrations of kids with a disadvantage, which can include remote and rural and regional and Indigenous kids and kids with a disability and non-English speaking background and all of that. And so, you know, I'm always thrilled when anything I'm involved with can actually offer the staff, the teachers, new resources and support, and also remind them that the education of the students they teach so well is important to a lot of us.
Yeah, that's for sure. Now, getting to the presentation at the New England Regional Art Museum on Sunday evening, what do you see as being the the most important thing that you would hope the audience would get out of your presentation, for instance?
Well, I mean, my latest novel, The Mother, is about domestic violence and coercive control. It's a thriller, but it's got a serious purpose. And so I hope we have a rich, broad-ranging discussion about relationships between men and women and why we seem to have such an imbalance of power and how that can often lead to really horrendous consequences for the partner with the least power, which is most often the female partner. So I would hope that, I mean, that's one of the things I wanted to write The Mother to do, to, you know, talk to people about these issues. And I'm sure the other writers will have issues in their fiction and their poetry and their work that they will also want to talk to audiences about. We will all talk to one another, I'm sure, about our various perspectives on writing, on literature, on communication, and probably the state of the world.
Yes, so quite obviously it's a forum with exchange with the people that are attending and talking about yourselves and your motivations in terms of how you go about writing a novel or writing a non-fictional piece.
Yeah, or performing. I mean, I know there's a performance poet, Huda the Goddess, who's going to be along with us, and I'm sure she will entertain everybody enormously because performance poetry is a wonderful thing to watch. But also, you know, if people want to know more about it, I'm sure she'd be only too willing to talk about it.
Yes, I read that she's a current Australian poetry slam champion.
So she's going to be awesome in that case because slam is just, you know, knocks your socks off. It's such an interesting combination of poetry and drama.
Right. Yeah, well, it quite clearly there's a range of different writers there. There's no doubt about that.
Yes, we're a diverse bunch. I think I'll be the elder of the group and the old lady. I'm holding up the old lady end of our demographic.
Not speaking of age here, but experience, you do have a very, very long and varied experience with the media industry. You've done a lot of presentations on various TV, radio and publishing networks, the news media, etc. How would you describe your history till now as a person that's active in the media industry?
Well, I worked in the advertising industry for 3 decades writing ads, and then I kind of slowly moved from that to longer form journalism and opinion pieces. My interest in public education, my advocacy for public education, was really the gateway, because when I first started advocating on behalf of public schools and the importance of public education to a functioning and strong democracy, there weren't many voices in that area, and so I got a lot of opportunities because of that. I mean, I didn't set out to get the opportunities, they just came, and slowly I broadened my areas of interest and what I wrote about, and I was very lucky and got, you know, some interest from media outlets and from TV and radio, as you say. And yeah, I just kind of I got out there and said what I thought, at first in print and then in all sorts of other way, other medium. And who knew? But there was a career there. And it's very sad in a way. I think a lot of people are very afraid of saying what they think. They worry they might be wrong or that people will disagree with them. But actually, I think everybody should say what they think. That's, I thought, what a democracy was about and what freedom of speech was about.
Yeah, it was interesting you mentioned education, because I have a book in front of me here that I purchased about 15 years ago when I wasn't very much involved in public education, and it's called The Stupid Country, How Australia is Dismantling Public Education. And it has your name on it as a co-author with Chris Bonner, who was president of the New South Wales Secondary Principals Association at the time.
Correct, yes. Now that's my first published book, in fact.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Now, you look at that, and the title's pretty self-explanatory and it involves pretty much what you were just saying. And it was a very well-researched book and one that makes great reading. But having read it, I'm not sure that too much has changed in the 15 years since that was written.
No, it's very sad, isn't it? We thought we'd gotten somewhere with the Gonski, but unfortunately they were very neatly hobbled by the usual powerful forces that seem to constantly act to advantage the already advantaged and further disadvantage the already disadvantaged. And when you think that they're doing that to our children, that is really horrific. It's a sort of... What we were warning about in the book was that if we carried on with this neoliberal influenced approach to education, which basically emphasises, tries to treat schooling as a market and therefore emphasises choice. Now, remember, I come out of the advertising industry. I often used to describe myself as the high priestess of choice, but I know when it should be applied and when it shouldn't. And it really shouldn't be applied to schooling because no child has any choice over the sort of education they will have, and they also have no choice over the kind of family they'll be born into. So the problem with saying that parental choice is the be-all and end-all, the most important thing about an education system, which currently most of our governments unfortunately do, is that you can only entrench generational privilege and underprivilege, the best way I can think of, to actually build a class system. And we're using our education system to do just that, because a child isn't disadvantaged through any of their own doing. They're disadvantaged because they've been born to parents who, for all sorts of reasons, have been less successful at negotiating their way through the world than a more advantaged child's parents. And so it's all about, we use our education funding alone in the world. No one else funds private schools the way we do. We're an absolute outlier in doing it. And what we do is we use our education funding to reward the parents' neoliberal government's approval, punish the parents' neoliberal governments don't approve of, without thinking that it's their children who are actually the point of education. Education isn't for parents. It's for kids.
Do you see that this may change? Is there any chance the Gonski review, which was done well over 10 years ago now, may be resumed in some form or other to redress the imbalances?
Well, they comprehensively hobbled it with the 80-20 split, which has left every public school in Australia, bar a handful in Canberra, not being resourced, so being resourced below the minimum agreed school resource standard, even though public schools overwhelmingly educate the most expensive students, the ones with the greatest degree of disadvantage. But it's a very complex thing to unpack, and unfortunately we're often fighting status anxiety on the part of many parents and the religious lobby groups. That's a powerful force to fight. But our democracy can't actually function properly without an educated citizenry, and therefore public education is too important not to fight for.
Yes, that's for sure, Jane. Just to finish off, you've published 12 books, and I gather most of them are non-fiction, which are, as the stupid country is, but you are moving a little bit more into fiction, is that correct?
Well, I'm still like to write both, but yes, I've been bitten a bit by the fiction bug, and The Mother is actually my most successful book, I think, apart from The Stupid Country, which was very successful, but The Mother is now a bestseller, and so, you know, there's nothing like encouragement to make you think you might do it again. And I do enjoy the ability that fiction has to take issues and present them in a way that I think people find quite easy to relate to. I think that non-fiction works on the rational side, on the intellectual side. It musters a case, it presents an argument, and they're fantastic and really important, and the research is invaluable, and there are wonderful books, you know, looking at all kinds of non-fiction subjects, and I'm very proud of the non-fiction I've written. But I think that what fiction does is it takes you out of your head, out of your intellect, and into your heart and your compassion. So you come out of judgment and into empathy. And I think that that's one of the things I really enjoy about writing fiction that has a social, you know, does have a social justice kind of theme through it, because I think it enables you to get to an audience that might not buy a book about domestic violence or coercive control, but they love to read thrillers. And so the message gets out to a different audience.
Well, thank you very much for that, Jane, and giving us your time to talk about your very interesting career and some of the very good books that you've written over the last 15 years or so. And you will be a guest at the Writers on the Road Festival here at Armidale on the 21st of August at the New England Regional Art Museum from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. At Dorigo on the Saturday the 20th of August, Glen Innes on Monday the 22nd of August, and Tenterfield on the 23rd of August. Thank you very much again, Jane.
Lovely to talk to you.
I've been speaking to Jane Carrow from the Writers on the Road project, coming to Armidale next Sunday.